projects. Before we get into that, Jill, you have some announcements that you could make about the doodle poll?
Sure. So we've sent out the doodle poll, and I recognize, as always, that all of you have standing commitments. So just take another look at the doodle poll, fill it in if you haven't, and please use the edit button to only mark no or only not check yes for those where you absolutely couldn't get out of your commitment. Try to think of it in your brain as you'd have to travel, even though this will be via Zoom. So just try to take a look at it again, and let's try to find at least two dates that work, and we can play with some hours on those dates.
And given some recent information, that's going to be an important meeting to attend, since we'll discuss it later on, but we may have to start thinking about the next iteration of CFAS. So let's try to make as much time available as we can. I haven't done anything on the ESBRA symposium in Romania. I've gotten a few people who'd be interested, but I haven't formalized the central theme other than updates on CFAS research. So, I will be working on that. And remember that your progress reports, Jill, you want a copy of those, right?
Yeah, once you have your final PDF, it'll say final in the top right corner. Please email that to me.
Have you written any progress
reports? No. They're written progress reports. They're the ones that are done electronically through NIH.
Ken, you'll get it done, Ken.
This is the RPPR.
Yeah.
Correct.
Right.
All righty. I've asked Joe to talk about a recent event at the NIAAA Council. I sent a link to that meeting to everybody, and hopefully you've had a chance to hear Joe's presentation. But I've asked Joe just take about 5 minutes and talk about it. Joe, do you want those slides? Jill basically copied the four slides of the future.
Really? So
if you want those, let me know.
On the
Sure. So for those, Ad already watched through this, the presentation. So first off, that I would like to say is that CFAS moving forward, it's a will be a reissue RFA. The idea of this sort, including the renew and the new initiative, nowadays has to be presented to the NIAAA's National Council meeting to seek their input. At the same time, provide a level of transparency to the greater community. So this kind of thing we have been doing. For example, Bill has presented his intervention and prevention initiative several council back. I also present the UH2 pilot project program a year earlier. And so this is step we need is endorsement and input from the council, which we got from them. And let me go through the presentation itself. Basically, I introduced the topic that we would like recommend the renew. And I gave an overview on the knowledge FASD and the challenges, and introduced the idea of the CFAS, the structure, the goals, the project related to meeting those goals. And then talk about, on this part, I have to apologize, certainly not do justice to all the great work you're doing. I basically using a 1 minute to talk about achievement on the idea that CFAS published 70 plus papers in the last 3.5 years. Achievement in the basic research arena and in the translational, especially automated 2D, 3D facial recognition, online neural behavior assessment. Then talk about CFAS as serving as a training ground for next generation of researchers. I also mentioned, for example, 2 diversity supplement we provided. Then I spent the two slides to discuss the program priorities. It's very broad based on the foundational 4 areas. One is to identify FASD case early and accurately in the diagnosis area. The other is improve the intervention.
Let me just interrupt for a second. If you check the chat, Bill Dunty sent out a link that has this all written out. So. It'll just make it easier for you, Joe, because we're now all looking at it, so.
Yeah, he's more tech savvy, so I'm not sure on my window I can see it. Anyway, the third overarching goal is related to expanding the basic research, basic and mechanistic research and the translation to meet the need for the challenge in the intervention area and also in the diagnostic area. And lastly, the overarching goals we set out for you to consider is in the prevention and reduction of alcohol use and in pregnant women in the woman childbearing age, as well as incidence FASD. This set of RFAs will be identical to the previous set. That is open competition. We'll use UO1 and UH2 as the research components. And any ministry's core and other resource cores. It will be in terms corporate agreement format. So we'll have a program, project scientists again with you guys. So that's broad stroke of what I present to the council. Then there are 2 members of the council. I made a comments in support of the concept. And what I have to say is that what we present at council is to get their endorsement input. And the detail of the these goals has to be fleshed out. It will be shaped further during the next stage of the process. And Bill, do you have anything to add?
Just a little bit. I mean, Joe, the point that you make about this was council clearance. In essence, Joe and his team was seeking endorsement by the council for the initiative. And so we've received this endorsement, and we can go ahead and further develop the initiative. Unfortunately, we can't provide any more information than what is contained within the council clearance presentation that Joe gave the synopsis of. There may be some questions about timing We're hoping to a timeline of the of this, and we're hoping to be able to provide everyone, the public, including the current investigators, with that information soon. But we really don't have any updates for you today.
So may I ask either Joe or Bill, among the RFAs that are listed at the end of the link you sent, Bill, there's a U24 for outreach and dissemination resources. So I'm just wondering, in general, what types of activities do you see fall under outreach?
Yeah, John. So good question. I was just looking at this link this morning, and it's a little unclear because it says that those RFAs will be reissued. I think that's not a definitive. It's not definite that all of those will be reissued. I think we're still developing that. So I think it's still a little premature for me to say anything or for Joe to say anything right now. But as you can see, those that are listed there are all the potential RFAs from the last renewal, including the updated UH2. So I unfortunately, John, I can't provide any more information than that.
That's okay.
Yep.
Understood. Thank you.
Yeah, that I just said it is true that we're still evaluating that aspect of it.
Any other questions? So the UH2s then, like probably a 2-year project, will go in with the overall application, and then you'll do what you did this last time and solicit separate ones later on?
I can't confirm that, although I think that that procedure went pretty well, other than the delay in the second wave of UH2s. And there were some things beyond our control in that process. I don't see reverting back to the way things were, which was that process being housed under the administrative core.
Okay. All right, any other questions? Well, thanks a lot, I appreciate it. We're gonna discuss this toward the end of the call as well, but Joe will have to excuse himself for that. So. All right, so let's hear of any exciting updates that people may have, and I'll just go through. If you don't have anything to say, just say you don't have anything. So Scott and Johan, anything new in the world of genetics?
Yes, I'll be really quick, but I'll share my screen. You see that? Okay. A couple of years ago, we developed a way to sex mice based on anatomy rather than genotyping. So it got a lot cheaper for us. So since we've been doing that, we've been paying pretty careful attention to sex in our embryos. And so what we've been noticing over, what we've been noticing over the last couple of years, and some of I've shown this before, but what we're seeing is with alcohol, and pay attention to the alcohol here more so than anything else. So vehicle on the left, alcohol on the right, is males versus females. We're seeing a big difference in males versus females, and we see this in throughout a lot of our genetic experiments. So we get a little bit of a genotype effect here, but we're seeing a big male versus female. And we started noticing it in this first study that we're about halfway through. We're also, what I also want you to pay attention to as I go through this is this vehicle here. So and pay attention to this background strain. So this EFCAB7 mutation is on the C527BL6NJ background. And it does not appear to have any spontaneous eye defects, unlike our C57s do. So here is another knockout KIF3A on our C57BL6J background. Here we see spontaneous eye defects in both males and in females. We get an alcohol effect in males that is pretty high, but it's significantly higher in females. And keep in mind, these are all ongoing studies. I mean, this one is pretty low. But what I also want you to notice here is that the number of males that survived or that we retrieved is almost double that of females. So we're just getting a lot more males, suggesting that the females that in this strain are either dying and they're having significantly more eye defects and more severe eye defects. And of course, brain defects that go along with that. Continuing on, this is a newer study. This is the HTT mice. This background is kind of crazy. If we give our usual high dose of alcohol during gastrulation, we kill everybody, males and females. If we give lower amounts of alcohol, like 1.4 grams per kilogram or 2.5 grams per kilogram, we get an effect in males that we can prevent in the knockouts, or well, in the hets in this case. But the females in this background strain have a much higher incidence of these spontaneous defects. And that is, of course, exacerbated by alcohol or something. Now, this one is lower. We think we're killing females with this moderate alcohol exposure, both in our wild types and the head of like zygotes. And so finally, this is our very newest study. We've gone back in our normal C57BL6J wild types just to see if indeed, because we've never truly and accurately characterized this, to see in our normal strain if there is indeed a male-female difference. And again, these are low ends here. This is like five liters of each. We don't see any, so far, again, in an N of nine, we don't see any incidence of spontaneous eye defects in our vehicle. In our vehicle males, we do in our vehicle females. And then when we treat with alcohol, we nearly double the effects of eye defects in these mice. And so I've shown some of that first slide before, but given that, given Joe's presentation the other day and the question from Jill Becker, and we've been curious about this for about a year now, or even more than that, but we're definitely seeing a sex effect. So that was my quick
thank you.
Spiel.
Just a quick question. Are yep. there differences in timing? Could it be a timing effect?
Not that I know of. We know across strains, when we look at our different strains with different knockouts, we always stage our mice so that you know, we take them out on day 7 or day 8 and make sure everybody is as close to the right stage as they should be, as what, you know, Kathy has done for many, many years. And if they're not, we actually adjust the timing a little bit. All of those four happen to be right on. But there is variation within a litter, like 12 hours within a single litter. What we have not done and what we should do, and that's a good question, is take them out and look at the old ones versus the young ones and see if there's a sex. We'll have to genotype those, but yeah, that's a good idea.
All right, thanks, Scott.
Scott, just a quick comment. It's something to add into your consideration. We just finished a single cell RNA-seq study with a later exposure than you guys are using, right. But we found that a loss of X in activation was a huge signature across multiple cell types in females, obviously this female specific thing. And so sure. Just think about maybe those types of things like X inactivation and such, could they be playing into your differential vulnerability too?
Absolutely. We've also been thinking about, we've started a collaboration with Leslie Morrow here in the lab, who looks at mostly neurosteroids, but these steroids are also produced by some of them are produced by the placenta. So we're wondering if there are placental differences, not just between males and females, but between strains, but, you know, so, more or less vulnerable strains.
So Scott, I pinged you privately, but I will email you. We've published last year a paper showing clear sex effects on placenta and plus and growth outcomes in the PAE fetuses on the B6J.
Yeah, I saw that. That was a much later exposure than ours, but yeah.
Yeah, it, and it's a continuous exposure, but
right.
I think there are definite parallels.
And ours was just a single exposure, so slight differences.
Yeah.
All right, Johan, do you have anything?
The most exciting thing is I finally got water to my house yesterday from the storm. And UT Austin just reopened to non-essential research this morning. So we're back in the lab looking at many of the same genotypes Scott just told you about. I'll spare you the details, but we're doing genetics again.
Okay, good deal. All right.
And your mice didn't, or and your fish didn't freeze like the pictures we saw?
Actually, it was really quite terrifying there for a while. So we have two fish systems and the RO systems for both of them went offline. And so luckily we had enough water and reserves to keep the fish in water, which they like. But they're back on now. So we managed to save everyone.
Ken and Miguel, any updates? You're muted.
Now we're not. We're good. All right. So yeah, our paper on telemedicine was published. And besides that, we're moving forward with you and Gans trying to engage the providers in Alaska to use the app. And I think those are the current updates. Ken may have some updates on the collaboration with the other studies. I know we would like to move the telemedicine assessments to research so that we are not backed up. And
Gantz has another training with the Alaskans coming up.
Yeah, and I will attend.
As far as the rest of our studies are concerned, I don't think there's anything particularly exciting to mention, Ed.
Okay. Mike, study. Any new and exciting things?
Funny, just listening to Scott's talk there, and one of the things I'm looking at in the past analysis of the infants taking a turn looking more at sexual dimorphism. So, and I'm also finding some eye differences in male-female eye differences in the exposed sets. More obviously, I'd imagine more subtle than full eye defects, but I thought that aligns quite nicely. We've done a lot of work lately with 2D and 3D stuff and the sequencing data with Lira and Tatiana. And what else have we done? Not a lot else. That's pretty good, I think. But yeah, things are coming along. I'm sort of going into write-up mode at the moment.
I'm going to email you some questions about face-based norms.
Earlier, a few weeks ago, I was working with Gans as well to try and push things forward in that aspect as well. So yeah, that's about where I am.
All right. Christy or Christiana?
Sure, I can update about both projects. So for the adult health app, we just had our first advisory board meeting yesterday with adults with FASD that went really well. Had some good initial ideas, and we've got a good schedule plan to keep progress moving in the design phase. So that's all going well. In the FMF Connect app, we are now fully underway in our Android trial. That got a little slowed down by COVID, and that's happening, and we're getting reasonably good response rates so far, and we'll follow that up for the next 10 or 12 weeks, and then we'll be continuing working on getting our RCT stuff ready to go. So that's where we are.
All right. Any questions or anything? Dr. Mattson?
Well, we're continuing to move forward. We're collecting data with our Brain Online. We've tested over 60 people so far, which is really exciting. We're also working with GONS to develop the data processing aspect of Brain Online so that when we get the data out, it's actually in a usable format. And we've gone through most of the subtests. I think we have one or two left to do on that. So yeah, that's our big news.
Okay, Jeff?
Yeah, we had a paper that was accepted this week in brain research that was looking at social brain regions and social behavior in the kids in our study. The imaging is actually coming along better than I was expecting, given the slowdown with the pandemic. We've been scanning now for a couple of months and are on track to hit our target with our PAE kids this month, and we'll overshoot that. So this is for our longitudinal follow-up, year and a half follow-up. So it's looking like we're going to be able to complete all those kids and then some, exceeding the goal. And we've been working on the large data set that we've obtained from the ABCD project. So that's serving as our normative background, and that data has proven to be really interesting and useful to use against as a background against which to look at the kids with FASD. Also, we're starting to work with Mike Suddy a little bit on another analysis similar to one that he did in the past, looking at shape of brain structures and face. So collaborating with him on getting some of our most recent data to him for that analysis. So all in all, things are going well.
Thanks. Tatiana or Leah?
Can you hear me? Okay. So like Sarah said, has the brain. I think we'll be able to send it to our adults and to the kids. And we're getting approval to have a really short consent, so it should be really easy for our participants to do it. And also under current review at the IRB, we have the videos that we've made so that people can watch them. They're 2 minutes. There's three videos, 2 minutes each, and at the end, the subjects can consent to be in the study. So that should really simplify and help, especially the adults in the study. And like Mike said, he's given us a facial signature type of variable, and for almost everybody that we have whole exome sequencing for. So the previous CFAS participants and our new ones from the online study. So we'll have close to 450 people to analyze in a whole exome sequencing analysis. So that's to me is super exciting. And we're working with Ken and Miguel to identify prioritize some people for them to see with the telemedicine method that they want to use.
Thank you. Joanne?
Just a question, Leah. What is happening IRB-wise with that? Do you have to submit? Do you not?
For the telemedicine or for everything else?
Yeah. For the telemedicine, sorry.
Oh, I'm sure we probably will, but we wanted to talk with you guys first to see what you needed and what we would, you know, get the details before we send in a submission.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Can I share my screen? Jill, can you give me permission? I have just one new bit of data.
Interesting data.
Just a second, let me move this over.
Well, life is like before COVID.
Yeah, we were in a squirrel monkey reserve in the Dominican Republic at Christmas 2019. I have one interesting new bit of data. We had added a chronic health supplement, really a kind of supplement of questions to tap in more to neuroimmune function to our big adult health study. And we've done it here in Vancouver, and Claire and Teresa both administered these additional questions in Atlanta and Seattle. So in the general autoimmune module, the questions tap into kind of preclinical symptoms that might indicate future development of an autoimmune disease. Skin that bruises easily, do you have unexplained rashes, persistent fever or night sweats, muscle weakness, et cetera, et cetera. There are about 20 questions. And calculated an autoimmune score. And I've shown this before for
the Vancouver data, but now we've graphed all three sites with the updated numbers that we have. And you can see that for the individuals, adults with FASD, the autoimmune score is significantly higher than that of unexposed adults in Vancouver, and the Seattle pattern looks identical. But in Atlanta, we don't see that at all. The adults with FASD are not showing this increased autoimmune score. We need to go back now. This was just calculated last week. So we need to go back now and look at the overall health survey for these individuals, and we need to run the cytokines. And we were waiting to run those. We have specific panels, autoimmune panels to run in addition to the overall cytokine panels. We're waiting to do that till we have a slightly bigger N because it's much more efficient and better for the data to run big data sets and get multiple kits from the same lot and so on. So we haven't yet run that, but it'll be really interesting to try to figure out what's going on here and what we can relate it to in terms of their health disorders or conditions that they report, and to relate this to the cytokines.
Is it possible it has anything to do with the race?
It's possible. These are clearly, this is clearly a different population. I should let Claire talk about it. This is largely an African-American population, more Caucasian in Seattle, more Caucasian, but a high percentage of First Nations individuals in the FASD group. So yeah, it's clearly they're slightly different populations. But whether that's the underlying thing, we don't know yet. This remains to be investigated, and we need a bigger N, of course. None of us have finished our recruitment yet, so.
Okay, thank you, Claire. Claire there? There she is. You're muted.
I am. I'm not even going to show slides because what we're mostly doing is trying to just collect as many individuals we can to make up for the COVID glitch. We are encouraged, however, because for tier two, we have 97% of our 2021 goal and almost 80% of our total goal collected. So I feel real comfortable that that's going to go well. And we've been able to collect almost 80 COVID protocols as well in the last couple of months. So that's moving along. Dysmorphology was a problem, but we have trained Gabby Ritfield, and she is now, as part of the project she's doing dysmorphology exams, and we're coordinating with Ken on that. Another big problem we had was controls in Seattle, and because it's a long story, but basically they didn't have as many controls as they needed, so we've been working on identifying appropriate controls, and now we're doing that. And we will present the results of the health survey at the RSA meeting with Raj's symposium. And another thing we're looking at right now is examining the relationship between prenatal exposure and adverse childhood experiences on outcomes, because it appears to be additive. So that I think is going to be an interesting finding. So mostly we're just trying to get up to speed on the data collection because of the, and to compensate for the COVID. The other thing we're having in Atlanta anyway, there's a resistance for people to come in because of COVID. And it is particularly acute at this point in the African-American population because there's so much suspicion and angst and worry and general problems related to that issue, that it is quite a interesting challenge at the moment getting people to cooperate, but people are persevering.
Okay. Tina and Raj?
Tina? While Tina's coming on, I can just give a couple things. We had a paper with the Jacobsons in the South Africa cohort published in Scientific Reports. And with the one cool finding is being able to predict memory function in infants with, aside from growth, but memory function with microRNAs in at 2.5 weeks and 6 months of age. And then we're, as I mentioned to Scott, we're in the process of responding to reviewers on a single cell RNA-seq study, which we were really interested to find that X inactivation was such a huge signal that could discriminate between the sexes. Just a short update.
All right, Tina there or no? She must have stepped off. I have her on, but she's muted or doing something else. Okay. I'm not assuming there's anything on the UH2s, but if there is, Susan or...
Yeah, I could just say that we're starting on the paperwork to get access to the data, and Leah has been super, super helpful on helping us with that. And she tells me that in the meantime, she's been imputing additional SNPs from their database relevant to the loci where and genes we're interested in. So we're definitely moving forward. And then I'll mention that the paper this was based on in AJCN with Jeff Wozniak looks like it's been accepted in at AJCN. We're just waiting for the final word after a typo correction. So.
All right, and Leah's really good, so smile. All right. Tom, you want to fill us in on anything going on at NOFAS these days?
Yeah, hi, everyone. I guess firstly, we have about a 25% increase in the number of individuals and families in our database. So if anyone is interested in any recruitment outreach that NOFAS can help with, please let me know. I think currently the focus on some policy and legislative work with the new administration. So we're working there. We've coordinated with some of the Senate Help Committee on questions to nominees Becerra and Surgeon General nominee Murthy in their confirmation hearings this week, and other folks like that. And the FASD legislation in the House and Senate will be reintroduced in the coming weeks. It could slip a little bit because of the delay in the budget, but probably late March. And so we've started a monthly sort of policy virtual meeting that Susan Carlson, many of you know, former First Lady of Minnesota and founder of MOFAS, now Proof Alliance. So she's chairing that for us. And we've had great interest in trying to increase the attention and investment when it comes to CDC, HRSA, SAMHSA, some of the other folks beyond the great science that's been done. So those are a couple of highlights.
Thanks, Tom.
So Tom, may I ask, a 25% increase in your database really sounds like a terrific success and outreach. Was there a particular initiative that you had, or was it just something spontaneous? I mean, how did that happen?
Admittedly, the focus was fundraising. Last year was our 30th anniversary of NOFAS and looked to increase the number of folks. But while that was in the moment important to try to increase the volume of low dollars support, the main importance is to be able to engage with folks, hear what their needs are, share that with you and others, and try to provide services and access to referrals and so forth.
Okay, thank you.
All right, real quick, is there any update from the publication policy or the data access committee?
I have an update, but I'm happy to defer to next month if you want to use the time separately, differently.
Can you do it in a minute or two?
We had quite a bit of activity this month, but it won't take me more than a minute. Hang on. All right, so I will do this at record speed. We had two concept proposals, one from Julie Cable, one from Mike Suddy. So these are the preliminary reports of an idea that's going to be hopefully turned into a paper. One of those was turned into a paper and submitted sort of simultaneously, but we have two manuscript submissions out of Atlanta. that are listed here. But we also had some papers accepted this month. You've actually heard about a couple of them already today on the call. This one is from Jeff's group in brain research. This one is from Miguel and Ken in ACER. This one is from the Tories. You can see those here, and I'm happy to share the links, or you can find them yourself, I'm sure, but I'm happy to share the links with you if you are interested. And this one is a paper from the Jacobsons that they continue to cite our the CFES funding that they received because they're following the same cohort. And that's it.
Thank you.
30 seconds.
Good job. Leah, anything on data access? You're muted.
I know. Okay. We had one request come in from Susan Smith that she talked about. We need a little bit more information. She needs to go back to her IRB, but I don't really see any problems. And I'll still go ahead and work on what she wants to see. Jeff Wozniak is helping us identify the neuropsych variables that we want to analyze. So we'll kind of do things in parallel to make sure that everything's done correctly and that we get the same results.
Great. Okay, Joe, I think we're going to start discussing. I wanted to leave the last 15 minutes just to discuss the possibility of a CFAS 5 and what we can do to prepare for a potential RFA and so that we are competitive. So you may want to drop off of here.
All right, thank you. Take care. Thank Good luck
you,
with
Joe.
It.
And Joe, you did a great job with that council presentation.
Oh, thank you. Thanks.
So I think you've covered CFAS pretty well. So thank you very much. All righty. All right. So CFAS 5 is a possibility. And what we did last time, and I guess, well, there are a couple things. How many people have listened to Joe's presentation and the questions? Well, I suggest everybody do that because there were certainly some interesting things that came up and Bill may be able to comment on them. One was this idea of differences between the sexes in the diagnosis and also for ethnic or racial issues in the diagnosis. And the idea of diversity came up in several points that were made, not only for diversity of subject population, but diversity amongst the investigators in NIH applications. So as we're thinking about directions to move forward, and you know, being part of CFAS doesn't guarantee CFAS 4 doesn't guarantee you any position in CFAS 5. We're going to be soliciting applications and have them reviewed, similar to what we did last time. We solicited one-page applications via RSA and various listservs and just emails and flyers, and they were due to us sometime in July. And then we selected some of those, and we asked for five-page more fully developed content proposals with some idea of a budget. And they were due to us in September. And then these were all ranked by outside reviewers. And then we decided on which applications to push forward into the whole CFAS proposal. They were due at the end of October. Now, I don't know what the timeline will be this time. We may have to push things up. Maybe Bill has some insights into that. And then start preparing, but we have to start thinking about directions we want to go and things like that. So comments? Michael, you have, I'm sure you've seen the council thing and
I think the general gist of what I took away from the council meeting is that there is a real interest in translation. And we are, I think, well positioned to continue in a direction that we started. And when I say translation, there was an important linkage made between addressing the challenge of fetal alcohol spectrum disorders and addressing health disparities. And I think health disparities is going to be a high priority for NIH, probably more so in this administration than in the previous 4 years. And, you know, we have always talked about democratization of diagnosis and treatment using app-based methodologies to be able to spread both to communities that don't have access. But I think that a linkage to healthcare disparities, which is, I think, intuitive as part of that, is going to be very important. In that respect, you know, I think we're also well positioned because our patient populations are diverse. We may want to look to see how we can further diversify our patient populations. Because again, I just, you know, listening to Joe's presentation and the discussion, think that this is going to be important. Translational aspects of the work that we do and a linkage to health disparities is going to be important. There is one of the four themes that is not encompassed by CFAS and has not been from its inception, and that's prevention. It's something that we'll have to think about and talk about. For all of CFAS's incredible accomplishments, it's been funded on a relatively small budget. And as you know, prevention studies are very expensive, as are intervention studies. And so we're going to also have to consider whether tactically it makes sense to take on all four aims or to focus on what we're well positioned to do well. The discussion and the presentation also allowed for a continuation of the work, an appreciation of and a continuation of the work that's been done at the interface between basic science and clinical work. And so I think that, again, we're well positioned with the balance of studies that we have in CFAS to address what was emphasized in this. And I would just second what Ed said, not only the presentation, but also the discussion are worth listening to. You know, the RFA will tell us something, but I've been hearing for 2 years about George's trip to Alaska. And I think that the discussion and the evolution of the RFA is going to reflect what George is still looking for, which is something that is a benefit to people who are not accessible to modern services and who are struggling to be able to deliver services to populations that are diverse and disadvantaged. So, you know, that's my first impression, and you know, this is something that our discussions are going to have to address, and we're going to have to evolve towards. I'm not expecting the RFA to be so different than what was foreshadowed, but we'll see it when we see it, and we'll have to figure out for the budget that's going to be available what CFAS can really put together. I don't know if those were the kinds of impressions you had, Ed, but that was what struck me as I listened.
Absolutely. I think the disparity issue, diversity issues are going to have to be addressed. And again, the idea of the prevention, they're typically expensive projects that we have not gotten into. But I think we may have to rethink some of that, as Bill just raised his hand. And he didn't smirk when you mentioned the small budgets. So,
yeah, I was watching.
So we'll see what happens. Bill?
Yeah, maybe I should have turned my camera off. Unfortunately, I can't comment on the budgets. I can't comment on a timeline, but we're hoping to have that information out to the public very shortly, so that this group of investigators can plan, as well as other investigators, since it's an open competition. Just a few thoughts. I think the point that Michael made in terms of research on underrepresented population, research on health disparities, it's definitely a goal at the NIH, and it's become very important in George's mind as well, so at NIAAA. And I would add that not only that type of research, but also having investigators from underrepresented groups is definitely, you know, a priority at NIAAA. So that's one thing I would add. The other thing, in terms of prevention, yes, Joe's presentation was fairly broad. He touched upon many broad topics. And CFAS historically hasn't had a project on prevention, but I would encourage you to keep an open mind. You know, not dealing with the budget per se, but you know, this group is very important in terms of NIAAA's research efforts on FASD, and we've come to appreciate that our investment in prevention research has not been adequate over the last couple of years. And that was one of the reasons why we issued the set of funding opportunity announcements that we did 2 months ago. And I would encourage this large consortium, powerful consortium, to consider projects in this area. And I'll leave it at that.
All right.
So, and may I add, I thought that I agree with everything you guys have just said. And I also thought that Joe's presentation was received very well by the council as a whole. They were very positive responses. And actually, I found nothing negative. They wanted to expand it. And I also agree on the issue of prevention. And this is a conversation that we had at our last summer's annual meeting in great detail. And what you as a group balked at was the prospects of what the costs were. But it's still something that all of you thought as a group was very important to do. And now NIAAA and the council are agreeing with your intuitions. And I think I agree with Bill that maybe it's time not to worry so much about the costs at this point, but to really focus on what's the best way to approach prevention at this point. I mean, there's different ways of prevention, right? There's primary prevention of preventing drinking in the first place, you know. To tertiary prevention is just trying to mitigate the lifelong consequences, and we do some of that now. So part of it just might be how you couch what you're doing as prevention efforts, but I think primarily is to really focus on fundamental primary prevention. So
I think we can identify perhaps high-risk populations where one could assess potential interventions.
So I'll just add one more thing, and it wasn't a direct part of this discussion, but it seemed to come up at a lot of the other discussions at the council meeting. And I'm not on council, and you're going to wonder why I watched the rest of this, but there is a lot of interest in COVID, and George continued to emphasize how devastating this pandemic has been on increases in drinking during pregnancy, and what we might expect to come from that. So I don't think science should be driven by the sort of pandemic of the day. what each administration is favoring in terms of its priorities. But I do think that science is drawn to where the money allows it to go. And in the next few years, there's going to be COVID money. There's going to be money to look at sex differences, diversity, equity, and inclusion. And to the extent that we can integrate some of those themes into the research that we do, all of which would be appropriate, timely, and important, it will probably assist us. Those were just a few themes that seemed to keep coming back, and we should be mindful of heeding their repetition.
We got about a couple of minutes left. Any other comments by SAP members?
What John said.
What Sarah said.
Sarah Jo has to go. Sarah.
So I think we should just record what Sarah just said and then play it at every meeting.
Well, I'm looking forward to it if there's interest in me continuing with the administrative core and trying to put CFAS 5 together. So I intend on putting a CFAS 5 application. It's an open competition, so anyone else can jump in too. So, but if you're interested, I will be in touch with everybody and we'll try to solicit ideas for directions, etc. Any other comments, Michael? Did you? Oh, you were lit up on
me. What Sarah Jo said.
Everyone agrees with what Sarah Jo said. Any other comment? Bill, do you have any timeline you think this is going to happen in?
The only timeline I can say is that we're hoping to have the timeline made publicly available very soon.
Okay. All right, then we'll start thinking of a new idea. Sarah Jo, bye-bye. Claire, all right.
Ed.
Yeah.
Real quick, I do want to make everyone aware there was a series of RFAs that were put out by NIAAA related to COVID to follow up on Michael's comments. And so you can find those on our website. The title is SARS-CoV-2, COVID-19 and Consequences of Alcohol Use.
No, it's increased my alcohol use. So. All right, everybody. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Stay safe. Bye,
everyone.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye, Jill.